Yo, your boys are back again, live in studio.
It's been a while since we were in the studio. I feel like it's been a while.
Yes, it has.
I feel like the last couple of times I've said it's been a while. Yeah, it's been a while.
Well, like you're geologically further away from me now.
I am a little slightly further away. And I'm also just a complete fucking shambles.
I was like, I thought like, because you're not fighting at the moment that like you'll have more time on your
Oh,
hands.
yeah, but like we were discussing before we start recording, I am just absolutely fucking awful at like just living a life and organizing myself.
If you don't have any kind of chaos energy about you, just like you're just not living, are you?
Yeah, I'm one of the most chaotic people I know, second only to my trainer, Aram.
You just bounce ideas off each other.
But yeah, it's funny, like, because it's like I've had a few people, I'm always talking like podcast related stuff. People always come to me with their ideas and stuff, and I've just been a bit shambolic lately, and I haven't been able to get back to everyone. And like I put something up during the week just to be like, I'm getting back to everyone, and it's been really cool because like I appreciate that people want to come with their ideas and stuff. So I feel like a bit of a dickhead when I can't give it full attention. But like I was like, hey, just let people know. And no, because I got a few messages about like, oh, you've been quiet. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, I haven't been that quiet. Like for a regular person, it's really I've been around. But that's more just like tells you how noisy I usually am.
Oh well, but that's all right. We never expect anything less from you.
I'm here. I'm here and I'm chaotic.
Exactly. But luckily, it's not just us on here. It's like we have a guest again.
Lucky for you, listeners.
Excellent. But let's just get into it. So a little bit of a drum roll introduction into it. So she trains at SRG Gym. That's led by Lewis Regis. She won the award for Oz Muay Thai Award for the up-and-coming female of the year. She has a fight coming up on Eruption Muay Thai against Erin Harbinger. And she went 4-4 like, in a very successful campaign in 2022. Across the line, we have Dory Duncan. How are you today?
Hello. Hey, good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining
Yeah,
us.
no worries. Thanks for coming in. Now, just to very clear from there, it's like you go by Dory. But that's not your
Yes.
first name, is it?
Ha! Oh, not this. Yeah, no,
Yeah.
it's
We'll clear
not.
the air. Don't lie to the listeners.
Yeah, so my first name is Rudire, so it's Thai name, and then my middle name is Dorian, but that is way too feminine for me, so Dory. And then yeah, Duncan. So Dory was just 'cause it's easier for everyone.
There you go.
Respect.
Official.
Yeah.
And then Hugh gives me shit for he
You
says that I take. You said that I take credit for Rugerex accomplishments.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a confused onlooker. Just that's why we need to clear these things up. It's like it's a window in.
Yeah, that's true.
Ah, fair enough. Especially if you're gonna try and get into one, you gotta go by that Thai name.
Yeah, you might have to double down.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Hey.
There you go. That's a free one.
That's some branding assistance.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, Dory. So, first time on the podcast, and so with everyone that gets on the podcast the first time, we want to know your Muay Thai origin story. So, what got you into Muay Thai to begin with? What were your motivations?
I always loved martial arts, and I always liked watching old kung fu, like Jackie Chan and all that kind of stuff. Jet Li was a big one for me growing up. I think that was my generation when I was a kid. Jet Li, Romeo Must Die, and yeah, so I just really loved martial arts. I did like Taekwondo for a long, long time, since like 5 years old, and then I kind of realized the Taekwondo that I was learning was really watered down, and not actually going to help me defend myself if I got into like it looks cool, all the forms and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, like 16, 17, I just kind of lost interest. And being, yeah, like I have family in Thailand, I always went back and forth to Thailand to visit and watch the stadium fights. And I was just like, this is amazing. Like I want to learn this. I want to be part of this somehow. But I never ever intended to fight. It was just part of my culture and that I just thought it was beautiful. Yeah, and that's pretty much it.
So you went from there. And so when did you decide to take the leap going into Muay Thai itself?
A funny story. Okay, is it a funny story? So like I'm from Canberra originally, and then I moved out of home at like 18. I wasn't doing anything, I was just partying heaps. I think this was maybe after a few years living in Sydney, and I just walked past this like building on George Street in Haymarket, and there was just a paper sign like printed on an A4 piece of paper, like, real Muay Thai, call this number if you want to learn. And it was like this really old, just tipping in a city, like terrorist building. And I was like, that looks legit. I'm going to text this number. So that was, I don't know if it's still operating or not, but that gym was called Muay Thai Temple.
Yeah.
So yeah, like Tuck, he was one of the, he's still pretty active in the Australian Muay Thai scene. He was my main trainer there. But he wasn't the number. The number was Boon, who was the owner. So yeah, I just started doing PTs with them there and really loved, because everyone was Thai and it was in pretty much Thai town. So I was away from my parents and away from home Canberra, but then I felt like I was still experiencing my culture. So yeah, stayed there for like 4 years or longer, maybe five. But it was just more of like a fitness and Muay Thai kind of gym, not a fight gym. So hence the move to SRG later on.
Yeah, and we'll get to kind of like the move to SRG and stuff and your current career, because it has really kind of, especially in the last 12 months, I feel sort of skyrocketed. But I'm interested, like, I find your story really interesting in kind of, Dory and I have met before, in speaking to you since I've known you. So you talk about move, like having, have, just for our listeners that are a little bit less aware of your story, you talk about having family in Thailand and home being Canberra, being originally from Canberra, but you were born in Thailand, right?
Correct. Yeah, Bangkok.
Yeah. So in terms of, like, I find it interesting that a lot of people would expect, you know, a Thai national to, you know, kind of like, you know, have it in the blood a little bit. And we know that that kind of typical origin story of a Thai-born Thai boxer is to start quite young. But your introduction to martial arts was very kind of like Western, like you like the Kung Fu movies and started in kind of like the Taekwondo. Yes. So why do you feel you weren't kind of more inclined to start like Thai boxing at a young age as opposed to none of the other arts?
Well, because I was born there, but I lived there until I was maybe four, and then was raised in Canberra. So also none of my family did Muay Thai. Like they watched it on TV and everything, but no one was really involved with the Muay Thai scene. They just liked watching it. So I wasn't exposed to it any time that I went to Thailand, other than when I specifically would ask, oh, can we go watch the Muay Thai at the stadium? And that was it. And most Thai people that I have encountered, other than in the Muay Thai scene, they're not really super involved in the sport, especially females. It's not really something that if you have a choice, you're going to do in Thailand.
It's
not something you're going to pursue, as a career. Maybe now it's different because obviously we have a lot more exposure. But, when my relatives in Thailand learned that I was fighting and competing, they were like, what? Why? Like, your mum moved you to Australia.
Yeah.
And raised you like Western so you could get like this education and or everything, and you've chosen Muay Thai.
And that is an interesting kind of thing to kind of discover when you go over to Thailand. I might have told this story on the podcast before. I remember the first time I was in Thailand, I was in a taxi and I was chatting to the driver, and he was asking me about, like, you know, why have you come to Thailand? And I said, I came here for Thai boxing. I want to do Muay Thai. And then he's asking me lots of questions about where I live and, you know, is there street food in Sydney? And I said, oh, like, not really. There's more like, you know, restaurants. He goes, oh, so you got like a bunch of restaurants where you live? And I was like, yeah. I lots of restaurants. He goes, so why do you do Muay Thai? Why don't you just become a chef? And I was like, no, I do Muay Thai for fun. It's not my work. I have another job. And he was kind of like, oh, righto. That's stupid. Okay.
He's like, wow, it must be nice to have so many options.
Yeah. So it is, you know, it's a different life over there. Absolutely. But I'm really interested to get your take on what's it like to kind of, you know, you mentioned you found Muay Thai from a phone number on a wall, which is, you know, that's a risky game in any case.
But,
texting the number written on a wall ended up having a positive outcome. What's it like for yourself to kind of, I guess, from the outside, discover what is your national art, you know, the art of your family? Is it kind of like, did you feel like kind of culturally connected to Muay Thai, or do you kind of adopt it in the same way, you know, another Australian person would? What was that kind of like?
I felt really, really, I think also because I was introduced by all Thai people to the sport. It's actually something that I get emotionally really invested in it. And so even when I'm training or just shadow boxing, or especially Waikul, when I'm doing the runway, like I get very, very emotional. I might not show it, but it means a lot to me, because I really want to represent my culture, and like this is our national sport, but it's not just our sport, it's like thousands, hundreds of years of heritage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was used for self-defense in war, not as just a spectator sport, you know. I'm pretty sure, but yeah, so yeah. I feel I have a really, really deep connection. Every kick, every punch, everything that I throw, it's because I'm so proud to be Thai and be doing Muay Thai. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you kind of feel like that process of discovering Muay Thai and starting to train and starting to fight kind of made you closer to your heritage, kind of like brought you closer to you know, that side of your family?
Yes, definitely. I was always close to that side. I'm close to both parents, but I'm really close to my mum anyway. But then there's just a lot of things that come with Muay Thai, as you both would know. There's a lot of customs, just little things like being respectful.
Yeah.
You know, why your pad holder, like bounds your pad holder, saying thank you before and after. Little things like that, like those are little attitude shifts I think you can carry into life.
Yeah, not absolutely.
Just training, right? So to be grateful and, be courteous to everyone and be fucking humble, because there is always a Thai trainer with 400 plus fights that is going to just get you off your high horse.
Yeah.
No matter how good you think you are, like, nah.
Mm-hmm. So going from, like, you know, moving on from Thai Temple, and now you're at SRG, and that's where you based all your fighting career from. Like, so why SRG of all places from there? Was that something like location wise, or did you search out a bit, especially they got a lot of great Thai trainers there with Lewis Regis as well?
Yeah. So I think some of our trainers at Muay Thai Temple were kind of like half-half pad holding at SRG and half-half at Muay Thai Temple, because Muay Thai Temple was so small. Mm. They didn't really need that many trainers. So a few of them, were spending more time at SRG anyway, and then starting to fight for SRG. And I just really liked that, even though it was operated and run by non-Thais, it seemed that Lewis really respected all the customs and cultures of Muay Thai and really wanted to preserve and keep it as Muay Thai, not a Muay Thai / boxing / mm-hmm. whatever gym. That's what really attracted me to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've followed Lewis for like a long time and mm-hmm. love his fight style. So yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And at the moment it seems like the stable, like especially like with girls there, like you got yourself, Allegra, Mariana as well. Like, it's a really strong female team that you got there. And also mixing with the teens helps as well. Like, you know, Kale and Adam and mm-hmm. James mm-hmm. also. It's like, yeah, it's like, how do you find, what's the training environment like at SRG?
Right now it is so good. It's so, so good. When I like first started, made the proper shift to SRG full time, I think the girls that were there weren't that many fighters. And then I think they were kind of at the end of their career, so they were dropping off with their training. So I started when the boys were still, like Kale and Singdam and stuff, I think they were still like 16. So it was really good because we were kind of the same physical stature. But now those boys are just, man, they're just getting better and better at lightning speed. It's really good now because I have, like you said, Allegra, Marina. There's also some amateur girls that are putting in a lot of work too, so it's really cool to see over the years the female fight team growing. But training with the young boys, like, they're amazing, man. They're so inspiring, and they're not just good athletes, they have really good attitudes and they're good people as well. Like, when I was that age, I was not that nice of a person and I was pretty selfish and not focused, you know. You guys have met the boys, like, they're so polite, so respectful.
Yeah.
very humble.
Yeah.
But overall, I was actually saying...
If you step wrong, but...
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I was concussed, like, recently. Very recently. maybe still now.
You and me,
I was
babe.
Actually saying to someone that someone said, I don't know, I think they asked like what it's like, or have you seen how much you've improved in the last year at SRG? And then I was like, honestly, to me, I don't see my improvement because all my training partners, not just the boys, or Allegro or Marina, you know, everyone, the level right now is so high, all my training partners. I never feel like, you know, a big fish in a small pond. I feel the exact opposite all the time. So because the level is so high, you're just constantly like trying to get better and better and better. You don't feel like you've peaked.
Yeah.
Because everyone is just so good. And we all just beat the crap out of each other without fail every week. It's never easy.
And that's so important in a high performing stable, right? Like I think one of the worst things really that can happen to a fighter is you can kind of become comfortable in your environment. Like there is really, and like you see this, of course, you need quality trainers, but you know, like no one thrives more than a fighter who is coming up surrounded by equally kind of hungry, driven fighters. And that is, I mean, I guess that's something will be interesting to talk about as well. Like it can almost be hard to gauge your own improvement when everyone around you is kind of making it feel, because like really, if your stable is, I mean, and tell me what you think of this, if you agree, like if your stable is strong, you probably won't feel like you're improving that much because everyone else is coming up at the same time. So it's kind of like, you know, fucking getting nowhere. And like, you can always see the people around you improving more than you can't really like, it's a lot more difficult to see your own improvement. Your only measure is how you perform again, you know, amongst the people around you. And when they're all getting better, it can kind of like disguise that feeling. So yeah, I guess like talk about what that's like. I guess like being in, you know, surrounded by so many high-end fighters and kind of gauging your improvement there.
It's really hard. That's something that I struggle with constantly. Also being really I guess I'm a perfectionist in every little thing that I throw, right? So without even paying attention to what all my training partners are doing, I'm already looking at myself being like, oh no, that like that jab was like, let's do that again another 20 times until it looks perfect. So then take that out of the equation, and then I'm seeing bloody Kale throw kicks like the hardest kicks I've ever seen, and he's only like 54 kilos or something, you know what I mean? Like
and offensively tall.
Yes, yes. offensively. Hey, you are a little bit too.
Me? No, that kid's taller than me, and he's like 12 kilos. It's like 7 foot two and 54.
Everyone's just fucking tall.
And he's still growing, man. It's nuts. But, you know, like you have all your teammates telling you all the time, like, well, I'm really lucky that my teammates are so encouraging. They're always like, wow, you look so good on pads, or like, you look so strong this fight camp. But like, at the end of the day, you have to believe that yourself. Like, you can't wait for other people to tell you you're good, or you know what I mean? Like, you just need to. And another thing that I'm learning to do is when people compliment you, to take it on board, not dismiss it. So when people say, wow, that fight was really good or whatever, instead of being like, oh yeah, I didn't really like it, but thank you, I have to
accept
it. Thank you. You're the same, right?
Yeah.
You'd think like a year of 4 fights, 4 wins, you'd be like, of course I'm happy. Like I'm really happy. I worked really, really hard to do that. I didn't even think that was going to happen. But when I look at each of those fights, I see so many things that I'm like, oh, like, I just wish I did this. I wish I did this. Why didn't I? Oh, I only won because of this.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing to be that way, but you also need to use it in a constructive way.
Yeah, that's it's going like I heard, I might get it slightly wrong, but because I have a similar thing. And like I've had conversations with, like I've done okay. Like, you know, I've had some times when, like I had some good fights and whatever. But like I was having a conversation with one of my training partners a couple of months ago, where they were like, you've come far enough for me to see that like nothing's ever going to make you like, yep, that was a good one. Like, it's always going to be like, you know, yeah, you could always do more. But at this point, like you've done enough for me to be able to recognize that like you're never going to be like,
yeah.
And like that's what like, it was, like, and the person I was talking about, like you'll stress yourself to death because it's like the, every time you achieve anything, all that like, you know, anytime you, and that's kind of like where, you know, it can be the pressure can sometimes come from is every win is actually just an avenue to go further. So you start to see line of sight to what could potentially be in the pipeline. And that can be kind of terrifying because you get that kind of like, you know, there can be that imposter syndrome that like, oh, but what happens if I go to the next, rather than like, you know, that productive kind of like, okay, I've knocked this one over and thus I am ready to progress to the next step.
Correct. That's all it is. It's progression. Yeah. It's But then we add pressure and, oh, I did this in my last fight, so now people are expecting this. Like,
yeah, that's especially because, and I think this is a conversation we've had with a couple of guests because, like, I think the level of female Thai boxing in Australia right now is absolutely unreal, and like, I'm really lucky to be quite good friends with a lot of great fighters such as yourself. You know, like
such an ally. We love Hugh. We love an ally.
We do.
Flew to Muay Thai League on his birthday. Muay Thai League all female card. Love that.
Yeah, and what a way to spend your birthday! And what a card it was. That was a great event.
Yeah.
Really, amazing. Really
sorry.
Event.
Yeah, I interrupted
No, I needed that. what we see a lot of the time, and this is one of the reasons that I find so many of our female fighters so impressive, is that like you take these massive leaps without really having oftentimes the opportunity to rack up of a lot of experience. And I mean, like when someone at your level or, you know, like Diandra and Davina are both great examples too, they emerge as these really strong fighters. But when you've had kind of a dozen fights in Australia at like a reasonably high level, that becomes quite a lot. Like it's where blokes can go away and have across amateur and professional 20, 30, 40 fights and have these busy years. You do kind of get a lot of spotlight quite quickly. And I do feel that's kind of like what last year was for yourself, because you think about Thai boxing and kind of it's all about experience, rack up tons and tons of fights. But you had this big four fight stretch where, you know, you fought on Muay Thai League, you fought on 1774. And then all of a sudden it's kind of like your kind of notoriety in the scene, and this is due in part, of course, to like you're quite good at promoting yourself and stuff as well, but you have a couple of performances and like it's almost like you make years worth of progress. Like it is really sort of sped up, and that can be, as cool as that is, it's also like something to deal with, right? Because you don't have that buffer of being able to spend years and dozens of fights getting your feet under you. It kind of just happens all of a sudden. So
no, balls to wall. Talk
through, 150%.
You know, I actually just had a flashback of my pro debut, which you commentated. You've both commentated a few of my fights. But I remember watching it back, and I, first of all, never thought I was going to go pro. And then when I listened to you commentating, you and John Miller were talking about like, oh, so who's next for Dory? Do you think like Tiff Lam, Nat Pavlidis? And I was like, whoa. Like, it's my first pro fight. Like, and these are girls that I've been watching fighting for years. So it goes back to what you said, like, first pro fight, but then already in the same conversation as these girls who are, you know, they've gone for like national titles and things like that. So it's really, really cool as a female to be able to do that. It's also cool because the level is still quite high, even though, in my opinion, the level of skill, even though maybe the women haven't had as many fights like 30, 40, 50, when I like I've trained with Diandra, I've trained with, you know, I've sparred those girls and some other women in the sport, like really still clean technique when they spar, when they fight, it's like their fight IQ is more than 10 fights or 12 fights, you know. I don't know why that is, but it's, I think it's just forces you to just fucking take it to that next level and start thinking like, okay, I am a professional athlete. I can do this. I've got this. But yeah, it was a lot. I think I just kind of Muay Thai League, the all female card last year. That was where it started for me. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to go. I'm turning 33 this year. So last year I was turning 32 and I was like, okay, I haven't got as long as I'd like in this sport. So let's just, while my body's good, while I'm feeling healthy, I'm feeling fit. I've got trainers that are investing so much energy into my growth. Every opportunity, just say yes. Like, and I remember listening to Kaylee Reese in an interview say something similar because she started later in the sport and like, look at what she achieved. So that's it's still now is what is in my mind. I'm just every opportunity, I'm grabbing it. And every opportunity to recover between fights, because I may not always be having the biggest gap. And I'm like, it would be cool to hear your input as well, Hugh, because you had a very, very active couple of years. Just keeping everything going and keeping it running smoothly so that you can perform again as often as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I know you've got like quite an interesting lifestyle in terms of like you kind of have got like a couple of day jobs, right? Like you don't have that that kind of more typical like work for the day and then going to training routine. Like you got, I mean, like maybe like for the listener's sake, what's kind of a day look like for you before we kind of circle back to that point?
Man, every day is so different. Goes to kind of what you were saying before, like chaos. Love the chaos. I don't want structure. Typical day. Okay, so roughly I'll work like 20-ish, 20 to 30 hours retail at Lacoste. That's why I love tracksuits so much. Athleisure, we are all about athleisure.
All about that.
Athleisure and sneakers, if we're not talking about Muay Thai.
Speaking my language 100%.
Yes, and personal training as well. So I got a qualification as a personal trainer just before lockdown, actually. So I'll do like 10 to 20 hours with that, and then 20 hours retail. Sometimes I'll do like events work if I really feel like just adding more fit into my day. But I can't do a 9 to 5. I can't sit at like one location for 9 hours or 8 hours. I can't do it. And I can't sit. I always have to be standing, moving around. Yeah. So yeah, a typical day, for example, would be maybe wake up, go to training in the morning. If I'm not working at, so say I've got training in the evening, like fight training where the Thais hold pads for us and everything. So then in the morning, I would get up and do my running and my weights. I might also have like one or two PT clients even earlier before that. So like at 5, 6, and then I'll do my weights, my running at the gym. And then I'll go to Lacoste and work the retail job for like 5, 6 hours and then go to train at night and then pass out and kind of repeat that in a different order for the next 6 days, for about 6 days a week. Yeah.
So it's not like kind of routinely structured. It's sort of like bits and pieces in reverse order.
Yeah. So some days will be like, some might be like, even like a 12-hour workday, actually, because I've just got clients across, then training. And then some days might only be 5 hours, and then I give myself a chunk of time to nap in the day. So there is, I do like having that freedom to move things around.
Yeah.
If I need to.
It's a few plates to keep spinning, but as you say, like that's possibly the benefit of having like a couple of different gigs is the flexibility of being able to move around.
Yeah.
Different pieces rather than having a structured 9 to 5 kind of arrangement, where it's a little bit less flexible.
Yeah. It is nice to have structure and like a set amount of money that you know is coming in, though. And annual leave. I don't have annual leave or sick leave.
Yeah, that's tricky.
So that's usually like if there's any public holidays or like weekends, I'm just used to working weekends most of the time. Like, it's not even a thing to me anymore. Because now I don't really have any, I don't party anymore because I'm always in fight camp. So it's not a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Before I would just party and then, yeah, work and just survived on a lot of sausage and egg McMuffins, I think, from the ages of 18 to 25.
Breakfast of champions. So,
yes.
I guess kind of staying to a couple of your points. So you're doing a bit of personal training. That's kind of one of your gigs. Is the plan ever to kind of like, you know, make Thai boxing your sole source of income, kind of work as a trainer? Or is that, was that a reasoning behind becoming a personal trainer in the first place?
Correct. Or,
yeah,
it was. I also, because my first few fights as an amateur, I was like the first female, I'm pretty sure, that they had trained, and they hadn't trained that many fighters, especially not here. So there was a lot of trial and error in that process. Like, I fought at a really light weight that I mean, it was no one's fault. We just were all like, kind of like, oh yeah, all right, you can fight it this way. Let's try.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I fought at like 53 or 54. Like, I could never now. So just a lot of things like that, or like, you know, in Muay Thai, we have to do push-ups between rounds and squats. Like, I didn't know how to do all that stuff properly. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to engage my core when doing 200 sit-ups a day. So I also went and did the PT course because I wanted to learn for myself, like,
yep,
how to do all these functional exercises properly and not keep getting injured and have back pain from doing a plank.
Kind of a lot of injuries before that?
Yeah, all the time, all the time. Yeah. I had no concept of like sleep, recovery, stretching, nothing. And then I started falling in love with just the everyday process. And then when I got more confident to teach other people, I really loved that process and seeing how rewarding it was for them to do something they never thought they could do.
Yeah.
Like Muay Thai. So yeah, I originally was like, yeah, I'll open up my own gym one day, whenever. Wherever, don't know where. But then my main thing, as I started to learn PT and started to get clients through lockdown and stuff, I was like, okay, I need to make a name for myself before I can have this business. Because who's going to, like, I don't want to be just some gym where it's just some chick like, oh, yeah, kickboxing fitness. Like, I'm Thai, I want to teach Muay Thai, and I want the people that come to me to learn real Muay Thai. So I just thought I have to build some credibility behind my name before I do that.
Yeah, and obviously doing a fantastic job of that recently.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I guess you talk about kind of learning, like we've now touched upon your schedules, super busy. You talked about learning a little bit more about recovery practice and training a little bit smarter perhaps. So to come back to your point about, you know, career longevity, I guess, is the overarching thing. You're trying to take steps to make sure you can get as much out of yourself while staying busy and being active. Kind of like, what have been the key learnings there and what have you implemented to make sure you can always give your best?
Sleep,
yeah.
Sleep, still struggle with that.
Yeah, me too.
Some days really, really good. Yeah, other days not so good. I think the timing of my meals, so I think the reason behind like why I was able to achieve what I could in the previous years because I outsourced to people that knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
So I invested in strength and conditioning at Ethos. I invested in, you know, working with Christoph, the dietitian.
Yeah.
And you know, I go to the Cairo like every week, every 2 weeks, because it just keeps everything moving the way that it should. So the main thing was learning how to fuel yourself between training sessions for me. So now I don't really, like, you're still dead in training. Like, if you're giving it everything, you're still going to feel a bit dead. But
yeah, that's the point of it, right?
I don't feel weak. I still feel like, okay, I'm fueled.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because he taught me heaps, like, through this process. Taking time for yourself. So, like, sleep is good for rest, but there's other ways to rest as well, right? So, like, I don't know. My thing is like going for a coffee and journaling. Because
yeah,
when that. I've done that, yeah, We go to the same spot, Hugh and
we
I.
We do. And that's what I do there as well.
It's what you do too, yeah? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because sometimes you feel more rested and ready to take on whatever you have to take on after doing that than a bit of sleep or a nap.
Yeah. You touched on a couple of concepts there that I really like. And I think, like, before I forget to go back to it, I love your use of the word outsourcing. And that's something I've been talking to a lot. Oh, you know, we've got a funny kind of setup at Sisoton these days in that it's kind of like myself and then sort of, oh no, Rosie's back on the scene now. So she's
quite I really extreme. Like, yeah, I'm liking the, you know, the female come up now in your gym.
Yeah, cool yeah, yeah. Yeah, Kayla and Rosie are both awesome. But it's cool. Like I knew Rosie through the scene. Like before I knew her sort of person. Mm-hmm. So it's quite cool to see, like, you know, she had a lot of fights before I'd even started. And then she kind of took her break and I started and I racked up a whole bunch of fights. Now she's kind of, not to sidetrack too much. It's funny that, like, I think I was there when she fought Yolanda. And
did she fight Yolanda? I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, no. Rosie's been around. Yeah, yeah. That's, I say this a lot. It's a funny thing when Rosie, she was kind of like knocking around the gym, but she's quite unassuming. You know, she's not one to kind of walk in and be like, oh, I've had dozens of fights. So, you know, she was around the gym for a long time before she kind of decided to make her comeback. And I was often saying to, like, because our fighters, back to the original point, are all quite new. And I was like, mm-hmm. None of you even know who Rosie is. Like, don't realize who's here.
She's
like,
an OG, man. Yeah,
yeah, she
and
is.
So
she
humble.
Really, really is.
Coming in like a sleeper.
Yeah, yeah. So she's kind of back on the scene now, but it has been a little bit of a, you know, it's I'm much, much more experienced, like our generation of fighters are kind of like a new crop, and that's something I often sort of talk to them about is, like, they have so many questions as you will when you're a new fighter, is how do you manage this and this? And like, it is, that's always the answer, is like, you can look at a fighter who's at that kind of more professional level and is a bit more dialed in and feel like they know about nutrition and they know about strength and conditioning and they know about, when really, like, that is the best lesson you can learn, is like, there is too much, like, you have to be a little bit
too
of a
much.
Like, you have to learn to understand needs athletically and things like that.
Yes.
You'll learn. But do not try to carry, like, to learn and implement everything yourself, because there is not enough time in the day. Figure out what you need to do. Who is the person that you need to speak to about that? Figure out, like, you know, who's trustworthy and trust them, right? Like, in the same way that you trust your trainer with your technical teaching, trust the strength and conditioning coach with 1000%. It is such a great concept of just, because it's so much lower pressure as well. Like, and I was actually, it's funny that you bring it up, because I was using the word outsourcing in the gym this week when I was giving one of my lectures. I'd outsource more if I could. Like,
me too.
Everything. Like, because, like, you know, I've got to turn up to the gym in the morning and then I've got to go and do my day job during the day and then I've got to turn up. That's where I need to be on, is like, training, working, training. I don't give a fuck about where my food comes from as long as it's the right food. like, I don't want to necessarily, I think, like, we can also, as athletes, like, there's almost this obsession with, like, productivity. It's like, look at me, now I'm in the kitchen making a fucking blueberry smoothie. Look, if that can just be in the fridge waiting to go, sick. Like, whatever gives me more time to train and to sleep, amazing.
My time, everyone's time is fucking precious.
Facts.
Like, and I am no expert. I don't know shit about a lot of this stuff and I don't have the time to learn it or the energy. So I'm going to give it to the experts. I see myself, right, as, like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm like this car. And then it's just, I've got, like, all these different, like, mechanics and whatever else is involved with making a car operate. I just rock up, they tell me what to do, put all the good stuff in, okay, and then I'm off, like, repeating that process. Yeah. But I'm not questioning, well, you know, it is good to ask questions, but, like, I am not the expert, so whatever you tell me to do, and it's working for me, so I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, and that's like, just do the research required to know who's worth listening to and then listen.
Correct, yes.
Right, and that's, yes. And I guess there's sort of like a couple of points we can kind of, but I mean, I guess the learning for me has always been like, more effort does not necessarily indicate a better job.
No.
And what I mean by that is like I often sometimes kind of like struggle to not be going a million miles an hour all the time because that's mm-hmm. what I'm used to doing. And so that mm-hmm. in my psyche is associated with doing things the right way. Like, you know, if you're doing a good job, that means you're like in hyperdrive at all time. When what I've been learning, especially the last couple of years, is like, if you can take something off your plate and you can just be chilling, that's a good thing.
It's very hard. Because you are used to, I don't want to say the struggle, because we're doing what we love. So I can't find the right word for it. I guess like fight camp, especially, you're always overcoming some sort of adversity. That's what we're addicted to. We see growth in ourselves. Yeah. We see ourselves progressing. By no means should, I don't think fight camp should ever be easy, but I think, like you said, take pressure and load off yourself where you can and be smart.
Yes.
And that is a conflict as well with having a Thai training background.
Yeah.
Because you have these amazing trainers. They have so much knowledge. They know, Smoke and Joe said this, and I will never forget it. Like, they'll forget more than we'll ever know.
Yeah.
So I by no means question their ways of training, because look at where it's like, it's obviously working for me. Like, if they've done an amazing job with me. But I remember at the start, just volume meant more as opposed to effort, right? But the thing is, a lot of us, we started late in life, so our bodies are not accustomed to that volume of training. So a lot of injuries were happening for me anyway when I first started. And only in the last 2 years I've learned, like, okay, I can't actually do a 10K run and then go to training. I can only, if I plan to have like a really heavy, like sparring, pad work, and then heavy bag session and like perform well in that, I'll do a 20-minute run, but run well and then sit, like try and improve my pace in that 20, 15 minutes. Because my hips, my calves, like they just can't even like lift to hit the pad after. More than that.
Yeah. And that,
it's a shame that it's like trial and error. You have to obviously get injured and stuff to learn that along the way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I think the biggest thing that you learn across a career is that there's always going to be external kind of influences, and in, you know, the key one being, you know, as close as you are to your trainer, it's still external. They're not feeling what you feel. And there's a lot of things in that. It's like, it becomes about communicating. Like, it is that classic Thai thing, like, go and run 10Ks. And you're like, well, like, my knee's not really feeling super good today. And it's difficult to, you know, you don't want to come across as appearing lazy. And that can be a mental game within yourself. And I tell you, the biggest problem, you know, I've faced across my entire career is doing things that actively worked against me because I felt like it was a thing to do, not necessarily for my own good, but to live up to an expectation. And that's where it's like, you have to have your training in line with, you know, the goalpost is set and you've got to kind of tick those things off, but you also have to be constantly self-assessing and saying, okay, is this going to do me any good? Because the amount of times, like, I'm getting out of bed at 4:30 in the morning because, you know, everything hurts and I'm just going out trying to do whatever. And it's like, am I doing this because it's going to make me better? Or am I doing this because I think I need to live in a fucking Rocky montage? Like, that's the, that balance.
And you're beating a dead horse, but you don't even realize it because you're just living. When you're in it, you don't realize. You don't have that perspective.
And you made a point earlier that I really like, and you said, like, you kind of, we as fighters become kind of addicted to a level of struggle. And this has been a reflection that I've been having, especially recently is that like fighting is a struggle. Like if you are going through a fight camp, there is always going to be like showing up and training properly, especially I know the way that you guys train at SRG or like, you know, like I train with Chet, for example.
Yeah.
It's hard. And that it's like, I think when you start, you're like, okay, the first thing you have to learn is like how to kind of meet that demand. And then the trap we can fall into as fighters is feeling like we always have to accentuate struggle. Like we go, okay, fight camp is our struggle. And that's how you improve. So you kind of set out to make everything a little bit more of a struggle. And that's like, it's a fine line, right? Between being like setting out a hard, because that's been a problem. Just, you know, it'll be insight into my stress.
It's interesting to hear how every fighter approaches it, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Some people fucking love it. They love just being like bite down, just get through the hard shit. People love that. Some people love that.
And that's like, I feel like you have to be concentrating the struggle, right? So rather than being like, show up to training at 6 p.m. or whenever you start training, and really graft it out and really create that struggle to meet what the demands of the training session, but then learn after that to kind of switch back off and do the same tomorrow, rather than, you know, would it really suck if now I went and did something else and I turned that session from hours into 3 hours and stuff.
Go home and just make the whole 48 hours or whole week a struggle. Suddenly the whole week, the whole 6-8 weeks is a struggle. Instead of, switching off after training, going home, not trying to make things harder for yourself, add another 2 hours to your training.
Yeah.
You go. That was another thing I meant to mention. I outsource mental performance coaching.
Yeah,
so,
I wanted to ask about this.
Yeah. So Mark Edmondson, so he said something to me because he played like international level rugby in the UK. And he was like, you know, one thing I have to say to you is like, I wish when I look back on my career, I really wish I stopped, breathed and enjoyed a lot more of those moments instead of just grinding all the time. Like, this is what, like, why the fuck are we doing this? We're meant to love it.
It's meant to be done
with love.
Yeah.
Right? It's not meant to be like, training, I've got to get this done, or I'm going to get killed again. And it is really easy to just be in that constant spiral of like, fight camp, cut weight, like, you know?
Yeah.
So something that really helps me is he says, like, when you get into the gym, fucking leave your bags at the door. Like, leave as soon as you enter that. And I still struggle with it. Like, I'm 7 days out from a fight. So this is now the time that your mind really plays those emotional and mental games. So I have been struggling with that again. But it's good to have like those mental cues, like, I'm starting to get a bit more angry for no reason. Or like someone just asked me for the fifth time, am I fighting? Even though it's on the board. Dory, fighting, blah, 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 in 7 days. Okay, so I need to just be more aware of like, leave my bags at the door, turn up, don't take things as personal. And then when I'm done with training, get the fuck out. And there is other stuff in life as well, not just fight camp.
Yeah, that's something I've never been super good at as well.
Well, now that's that time for you, right? Like you're having a little bit of a break. Does it feel like a break, or are you just like, what am I doing?
Look, honestly, it's less, probably something like I should talk about it because it's not it's probably one to park for a different time, but I've been having a pretty difficult time with it, to be honest.
Yeah. Because there is that, it's really fucked up. It's so fucked up because we associate a lot of our worth as fighters with the fight and with competing. So when that's gone, what do you have that drive to attach to?
Yeah.
I can't speak for you and your experience, but I know that that's how
I think this is probably something I should do. I probably won't.
I think you should do a session.
Hold me accountable. That would be a good one because I just think it's like, especially when you start like quite young, like, you know, I don't even know when my first fight was, especially because like, They were unsanctioned back then.
Was
there headgear in New South Wales then?
Probably like a decade ago now.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, I don't know. I think it does come back to like this point. Yeah, it becomes your identity, right? But I think like it's funny because again, I was having a conversation with like one of our newer fighters about this the other day, and like it was Rosie actually, was just listening to me kind of like give my take on this, and she was like, "You would be like so much better off if you listened to yourself." I think the most important thing to learn as a fighter is that like it takes this like incredible to fight at a high level, like, you know, high even, you know, like within Australia, to fight at a high level, to fight like the top fighters, takes an incredible level of drive and discipline and focus and obsession is probably a word to put it, but regardless, you are not what you do.
You are you,
but it's like we feel like as fighters there is this thing where we like it's almost, you know, like we, like you look at fighters like social media feeds and it's almost like they're reluctant to show that they went to the fucking movies with their friends or something like that. It's like it's almost this cool thing that like all I ever do is, and like we as I'm guilty of it as much as anyone else, we perpetuate this idea that newer fighters follow that like it's got to be like I wake up and I go for a run and I do 1,000 push-ups and then
I live and breathe this.
Whereas it's like there's, I look now and I definitely when I was young, like Shane remember when I was like younger, I was like that, like I didn't have a thought that was about anything but Thai boxing for try, like they'd be like, "You're going to understand when you're a bit older that this is not healthy. Like, you don't get it now." Like you're, and, like, I'm a bit older now. And I get it.
Now you get it. Yeah.
And it probably took till now that it's, like, I wish now. Because, like, I can't. Like, I sometimes genuinely struggle to do anything else. Like, I just go, okay, I'm gonna take a day off. That would be good for my mental. And I'm, like. Okay.
And then you don't know what to do with yourself. Yeah. Like,
what else have I got?
And then it's also, like, for me, like, I'm super lucky to have, you know, the network that I do across Thai boxing, stuff like that. But when my phone rings to talk about Thai boxing, right? Like, you know, like it's, and that's really cool, but it can sort of contribute also to like, if you are starting to get a bit burnt out, it can start to feel like you just sort of don't have that. And it's not like I that's probably the problem for me is I never want to get away from it. But you burn out the same way. You almost have to be, because people would try, like when I was younger, Shane would try to be like, "Don't come to the gym tomorrow. Like, just don't. Just go and do something else. I'd really think it'd be better for you to do that." And I didn't. I didn't listen.
Couldn't keep him out.
But it's hard because that's someone else telling you, right? Like, it's an external, you know, force telling you. It's not you making that decision on your own.
Yeah. And then it's
so
like,
sometimes if you're the type of person that if someone tells you what to do, you it'll make, if someone tells me what to do, I want to do the opposite. So
Yeah.
So then you were probably just like, "No, everyone wants me to, I don't know what they're talking about. They want me to calm down and stop." But then you're like, "Nah, love it."
Yeah.
And I actually noticed it with myself, especially in my like relationship. No, I noticed it in the Christmas break because I devoted 150% last year to Muay Thai. And then I was in conversations with people that were not at all involved in Muay Thai. And I was like, "Oh, what do I we talk about?" Like, or I'd get a bit bored, or not bored, but just I wasn't as involved in the conversation, or like my mind would just drift off. And I was like, "Oh, okay, I think the fact that I can't even hold a conversation with someone outside of Muay Thai properly without getting bored, that means I need to give attention to other areas in my life." Yeah, because there is so many people outside of Muay Thai. I have a lot of friends and family that support me, and their life is not Muay Thai. So giving, you know, attention to the things that they care about or the things that they do is equally as important, I think. Still and, learning and how the fuck to do that, but
Me too. But I think that's really interesting thing to kind of get your take on, because I know I know it's something that a lot of, and it probably does tie into this idea that you've been fighting for a while, but I kind of feel like with the move to like, as you sort of went pro, you kind of switched the intensity, you know, like started being a lot more active and kind of took that big leap, is that it has been like a 12-month shift from almost like from hobbyists to high-end professional and that kind of trying to adjust to that, I can't imagine it's easy because, you know, to come back to what we were discussing earlier, it's like I got to do it nice and slow, you know, over the course of I got to have 20 amateur fights, you know, before I went professional and got to kind of ease in. But you know, female fighters often, due to just the size of the talent pool, often don't have that luxury.
I think I experienced some sort of like, would it be a hangover? Like that's the only way I can really describe it is because you're going like, you're so focused on this one thing. Like I'm really lucky. I don't know how my partner Verge is still with me, honestly, because I really neglected a lot of things at home because I was just so focused on that.
Shout out Virgil. He's a really good dude.
Shout out to Verge, top tier boy. He's met him. He's also another really tall human.
He is very tall. Very, very tall, yeah.
I still get like, he's really like gentle and like he's not like big and clunky, even though he's super tall. So like in the apartment, if I just turn around and he's there, I'm like, oh! The sheer size of him. Luckily, he's really involved in sport, basketball.
Yeah.
He was at like really high level basketball. Yeah. Being Filipino and tall. So it was really cool because I had someone that understood what it takes to dedicate to your sport, but it wasn't the same sport. So it wasn't like I was going home like to Muay Thai, to more Muay Thai. Like I had someone that had been in the sports field, but I didn't have to, I could zone out and switch off from Muay Thai. But yeah, I was just really lucky that he got that. Like I honestly don't know how. He was so supportive and he loves watching Muay Thai. He loves watching like my pad work. Like he came to Muay Thai League and he fucking loved the all female card. He was so excited.
Yeah, we were hanging out on the table.
Yes, the two tall boys ringside.
I'm not that tall.
Everyone that hasn't met Hugh yet listening to this is being like, man, that massive guy. He really helped me keep my shit together, as well as just, the support network at SRG. Lewis, like, he's lived all of this. Like, everything that we're going through as fighters, he's lived it. So he's really easy to talk to about these things and give advice. I did experience that. I don't know what it was. I guess you could call it a hangover or, like, a come down.
Yeah.
Of just giving everything. Yeah. And then that was when I looked around at my life and I was like, okay, this is amazing, but I can't do that again. I can still achieve. I've created the momentum now.
Yeah.
For my fight career. And I will still give 110% in training and I will give all the love, but I also need to give that love to other aspects of my life because
what happens when I retire,
I am going to retire at some point. I want to have a good foundation to retire with as well.
Yes.
And not be like, oh, wow, Dory, like, okay, she fucked everyone off just to be like a world champ. Then I'm a world champ alone with my fucking trophy and just broken bones.
Yeah.
You know? That's like my worst fear, I think, that this visual that I have of myself, like I've got all this bling, but like I just forgot about all the people that cared about me. I don't know why. Maybe I watched too many.
No, I get that absolutely. You know, like what is success worth if it comes at the expense of all other aspects of life, right?
Yes.
But to switch gears slightly because onto like some really, really good discussion points there. I think we're probably going to have you back as a repeat guest. But before we run out of time with you, I do want to touch on your upcoming fight, of course. It'd be a waste not to chat about that. You're up on the big eruption card in a week against a Queensland favourite, Erin Harberger. Don't think I've seen her on the scene for a while. I think this is something of a comeback fight for her. Really highly touted, especially as a junior. Like when she was, I remember her coming up at about 16 years old, being really, really impressive. So talk us through the match. How's your preparation going? What can we expect from this one as part of what is a sweet card?
Yeah, I'm so stoked to be on Eruption. Like, you know, this is, I guess, the first opponent I've had that is really, really, really experienced, not like same experience as me, you know? So I'm very excited at that. you know, the old me a year ago would have been scared at that,
yeah.
you know, but now I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, this person has way more experience. Like, this is just going to, it's, I'm going to see another version of myself in the fight now, because she's going to push me to new levels. Like, this fight, we're going to push each other.
Yeah.
It's like a win-win situation.
Yeah, yeah. Way.
Yeah, and on a really good show. I think we're the only female fight as well on that card.
There's been a little bit of a shortage. A little bit of a shortage.
Because there. Nakia nabbed everyone for Muay Thai League in 3 months, in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Quick, she's very organized.
Yeah, that's you know, blessing and a curse, eh? But it's
yeah,
kind of the next gen starts to sort of come out soon and start to fill some of these cards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I am really this one's been a bit of a different energy, I feel, because I'm like, all right, Eruption, like this is it. Like, it's a big show. Yeah, it's the biggest show, I would say. Yeah.
It's a really cool show to fight on. You'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, so you meet Uncle Paul as well.
Uncle Paul, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't met anyone, I guess, involved with that show.
Yeah, really. You'll love it up there. It's such a cool experience. They do a great job with the show.
Yeah,
it looks done really well.
Nice. Excellent. So just like, you know, because we're on deep personal, I got a deep personal question for yourself.
Deep personal? I feel like it's going to be the opposite because you've prefaced it. Saying that. Yeah,
that's, go that's on. Cool. What's your top three favorite animes?
Oh yeah, good one. Okay. I don't know if you can see, but the only poster I have in my house is an Attack on Titan one there on the set. You're a weeb. okay, so Attack on Titan, Bleach. I'm only allowed three.
We are shortening our time.
okay. Dragon Ball Z. Because of, like, when I think we're all similar generation, but like waking up, cheese TV, watching Dragon Ball Z before
cheese
school.
TV, geez,
yeah. It was a bit, my parents were a bit concerned because, like, you know, when you're a kid, you just draw all the time because we didn't have iPads. And all I drew was Dragon Ball Z and it was just all like ripped, muscly men. And my parents were just kind of like, oh, do we need to have like a talk with her yet about the birds and the bees, or like, and I was like, nah, I just fucking, I want to be these dudes, you know, they're just so sick. But yeah, they're my top three. And fun fact, on the treadmill, usually I'm listening to anime
unless someone takes it.
Songs. Yeah, well, fuck, this week it's been a lot. Been a lot of people. I think I've just invited more people to take it, actually.
That's all that did, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so when I'm running, if I'm not listening to a podcast, I'm listening to anime opening songs because they're just so, you know, they're inspiring, man.
They just say, yeah, they are. They are their own little Rocky montages.
They're all little Rocky montages, exactly. What do you watch?
Like my recent list, One Punch Man, My Hero Academia, and Chainsaw Man.
Okay, My Hero Academia is good. That one's a good fight camp one.
Yeah, it is. So if you want triumphant stories of people coming overcoming obstacles, yes, that's your go-to.
Yeah, and they're trying to be superheroes. So, yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Not to segue from the nerd shit, but Dory, we did say we'd get you out of here on a certain time, and this is my fault, but I just think we got – look, you know, sometimes I just get stuck in on the show. I really enjoyed this episode. I'll have to go back and listen in because a lot of insights from yourself as a, you know, like I like doing this show because I just get to kind of just shoot the shit with high level fighters such as yourself and lots of kind of takeaways and some good discussion points that, like, I think a lot of the listeners will take a lot away from that. And I think I've just off of this conversation, I've got different ideas for things that I think are worth a little bit more detail. So really appreciate your time on this one.
Oh, thank you.
Before we do go, always want to give you the chance, any kind of supporters, anyone you want to give a quick shout out to while we're on.
Oh, man. Just my gym, all my trainers. I don't know. I think I talked about all the people that.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the interview anyway. But yeah, as you mentioned, Eruption in less than a week now. So I'm really, really stoked for that. And I'm fighting with my teammate, Adam Singdam, who is well known on the scene as well. So Team Thailand, we're going to Queensland.
Yeah, so we'll share all the live stream info on that. Make sure you watch. It's going to be a great car, headlined, of course, by the rematch. James Sweetass Honey versus Jay the Dingo Tonkin. Yeah, really looking forward to this.
Yes.
Tell the fans where they can find you. What's the best place to reach you on social media and whatnot if they're not already?
Yeah, so just Dunk Buns on Instagram, pretty much. Yeah, DUNCBUNS. I actually don't remember why I came up with that name, but that's for the next interview.
And any potential sponsors out there, support your girl.
Oh, yeah.
Buns, for sure.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah. I guess that's all. Thank you. That was really fun. I feel like we need another 3 hours, man.
Yeah, and I'm down. Let's do it. So maybe I'll do the send off today. Just a little. If you're listening, you can support the show. Don't just listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It helps us a lot if you actually hit subscribe and give us a rate. Helps you too because you get the episodes just delivered to your feed. Subscribe on YouTube too. And of course, the best thing you can do for us is tell a friend who will enjoy the episode. We produce many great conversations such as this one. I hope you enjoyed today. Thank you once again, Dory, for joining us. Very much looking
forward
to see
you
fight next week. And to the listeners, until next time.
Peace.
Thanks again for listening to the Combat Chat Podcast. You can catch all episodes on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and all other podcast platforms. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share. Follow your boys on Instagram, Facebook, at Combat Chat Podcast. See you next week.